Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're live on the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. As usual, my name is Kingsley Kipuri, and I'm going to be with you for the next hour. Joined in studio by my usual partner in crime, Greg Nicholson, who's still, you know, dealing with the experience he had watching Beyonce's visual album over the weekend, I think.
Takes a while to process, Kingsley.
That's it. And we're joined in studio by somebody we've had on before, Lee Molefi, who's a creative strategist at Liberty Africa.
Yow.
Welcome back, Lee.
Hey, man.
You went a bit rogue last time you were on, so we had to put you in the naughty corner for a bit.
Hey, man.
You turned a 5-minute segment into like a 40-minute monologue. So you're back well behaved.
I hope so.
Lee's launching an incredible platform together with Liberty and together with the program or project called Voting is Power, and we'll be talking a bit about that later in the show. Before that, remember you can tweet us on @DMShowZA. I'm told we've just set up an Instagram account. I'm not sure too much about that, but Greg is on the ones and twos on the gram. What is it? Is it also called @DMShow?
No, this is the Daily Maverick Instagram.
Oh, it's a Daily Maverick Instagram.
Follow. Yeah, okay. Interact.
I don't know a whole lot about what goes on Instagram, but Greg will post fun things. Okay. Now finally to the show. An issue that we haven't, you know, given as much airtime as we should have here on the show. I mean, we have on the site, but not here on the show. And that's the RU reference list, the Rhodes University reference list, and the protests that have come out since that. We've been following it on Twitter and trying to see what's going on. Protests that have come about as a result of rape culture, that sort of the female and some of the LGBTI students down at Rhodes are protesting about and saying that it's too much. There's the patriarchy and the misogyny going on in their university experience is unbearable, and enough is enough. So we've been seeing a lot about that going on, and we said, you know what, we have to talk about this, and we have to give it some airtime. Of course, it has to be said up front, it's three heterosexual male people in the studio talking about this, and you know, that irony is not lost on us. But we said, you know what, we're here, and we still, even as men and hetero men, with all the privilege that we have in this world, still need to talk about it. We can't shy away and say, you know, and we won't talk about it because it's orcs. So we're here and we're going to make it happen. Okay. First up, we will be talking to Mitchell Parker, the editor of Activate Online. Mitchell, can you hear us? Okay. We'll just have our producers, Bongile, just working on the Skype, back end of what's going on here. Lee, I'd love to start with you, or perhaps Greg. Is this something you've been watching?
I've been following it on social media and some of the news reports. And I think Activate Online, the sort of independent student newspaper, has done a fantastic job, and that's why we got Mitchell, the editor, on. And I think it's really one to follow. They've been really posting a lot of tweets, videos, as well as on their site. You can learn a lot about what's going on down in Grahamstown from there.
Okay, I think we're now good to go. Mitchell, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
As can
mentioned,
you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. This is Mitchell Parker, editor of Activate Online, independent student news source. Now, Mitchell, Greg was just saying, just how high the quality is of reporting and coverage coming from Activate has been, and we haven't given it as much attention as we should on our show. And we'd love if you could just start by giving us some context on the protests. Was it just a spontaneous reaction to something that happened, or was it a build-up? What could you just give us some context on how we got here?
Okay, so it's a bit of a complicated issue. So at Rhodes every year, this year will be the 10th year that'll be happening. There's a thing called the Silent Protest, which is a yearly kind of show of solidarity with victims and survivors of sexual abuse, sexual assault, and other such kind of sexual crimes. So the conversation's been happening for a while. We did also see a couple of weeks ago an organization called Chapter 212. They put up a poster campaign basically speaking to the way in which the university deals with rape and sexual assault cases within the space. So putting up quotes from, you know, university prosecutors of them saying things like, are you sure you want to really go forward with this? You know, you're going to ruin his reputation. What were you drinking? What were you wearing? That kind of stuff. So it's been a conversation that's been ongoing for a while at Rhodes. But it was all sparked by, and this is kind of where the hashtag comes from, the reference list, was posted anonymously on one of our confessions pages that has since been taken down, and was then shared to our SRC page of a list of 11 accused perpetrators of sexual violence. And basically from there, we've seen this evolve into the mass protest, the mass demonstration that we've seen today.
Okay, I mean, I hear you, and another big complaint, and you've mentioned it through the, you know, your mentioning of the quotes that are being put up of how this is received, and a big complaint seems to be the university's handling of sexual abuse claims, not only in the past, but also their response to these protests. Could you just give us a bit more detail on how sexual abuse and claims of that and accusations of that have been dealt by the university in the past?
Well, I think the thing is that what we've seen is that for the most part, there have been a lot of people who've come forward and have said, I've tried to bring my case to Rhodes to say, look, I don't want the person who's perpetrated this crime against me in the same space as me. So these are people who are having to deal with having people who have done horrific things to them in their lectures with them, in their residences with them, in their dining halls, just on the same campus as them, because we are quite a small campus. Mm. And in a lot of cases that have kind of come up, and this is, again, what the Chapter 212 campaign has tried to bring to light, is that the university has basically really not done much. Because I think one of the big issues in terms of our policy is that you have to prove intent. Mm-hmm. And proving intent in terms of rape is a very difficult thing to then prove. So I know there were two cases that have been reported this year at Rhodes, and that's just the reported cases, yeah. One of which was then dropped simply because proving intent was too difficult. So that's the one thing. The second thing is then also just the way in which the individuals are then dealing, the individuals who are in charge of trying to go through these cases, the proctors and the prosecutors, the kind of lack of tact, the lack of engagement that they have, the lack of humanity, arguably, with these people that are going through such difficult times in their lives, that, you know, they're basically just really denying them and kind of protecting the accused as opposed to, you know, comforting those who are accusing. So I think that's the one thing. I know that there are policy reviews that are underway and that there are long-term kind of institutional changes that need to be changed and made. But I think for the most part, it's to a large degree, just the people themselves not actually following through, making sure that things are happening and really getting stuff done.
I mean, I hear you, Mitchell. I'd like to just zoom in on the reference list itself a lot. I mean, it's the name of the hashtag, and it's what a lot of people are hearing about first is the list. Just give us some detail on where exactly it came from and how it got to the page. As you mentioned, it was shared. And also just the different opinions of some people and how they are responding to the publication of the list.
So in terms of the reference list, it was posted on... I'm going to have to paraphrase the name of the page because it's since been deleted, but basically a Rhodes Queer Confessions, Comments, Concerns page. Just a list of names. It didn't in any way kind of say these people are, you know, guilty of crimes. But it was a list of names that we've kind of had seen through kind of discussions on Twitter and that kind of stuff over the past couple of weeks that it just kept on kind of coming to the surface. So when it was shared, someone took a screenshot of it and posted it on our SRC page, which is quite active. People immediately went, okay, we know what this is. We know what this is about. And as such, then people tried to take action in terms of that. So we don't know who posted it. We have no idea who's behind it. But I think the reactions to it have been twofold. So there's the general legal perspective, which is, one, that, you know, it's taking away the person's ability to, you know, really be innocent before being found guilty, and that there's the whole legal perspective about how it's arguably defamation and that kind of stuff. But I think the more predominant view, at least in the conversations that I've had, is that although perhaps unfair, it has brought to light and has, you know, given people validation where they previously didn't have it. So I've personally had conversations with people who've said, finally, I'm validated because the person that, you know, did this thing to me's name was on the list. There was even a case reportedly where one of the people on the list went through the whole procedure through Rhodes and, you know, going through the whole prosecution and was given community service hours instead of being, you know, excluded. And you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the minimum sentence for something like rape is 10 years in prison. To be given community service hours where you basically have to work in the kitchens and like clean plates and put stuff away, there's a bit of a disconnect there. So I think, yeah, I think it's people think it's good in that it sparks a debate, but some people are a little bit hesitant in terms of the legalities of it. But I think for the most part, it's been a positive reaction.
I mean, thanks for sharing that. So I think we're all sort of just hearing this community service sort of aspect now, all just kind of taking a step back and saying, you know, what the hell?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Just moving on from the list itself, I mean, I think a lot of the images we've been receiving are centered around the protests themselves. And there's been a lot of sharing of images of the topless protests and the images of the police interacting with the – interacting, that's a very beautiful euphemism, but with the protesters.
Yeah.
and a lot of people are saying there's been a, you know, use of excessive force in how they're actually treating the protesting students. Is that been your sort of what you've been observing down there?
I know, for example, one of the members of my team was actually arrested by the police on the one day, and it's just been an interesting on the Wednesday. It's been an interesting thing to see, just in the sense that the way in which it was handled during FISMA's fall and the way in which we're seeing it now is very different. So during FISMA's fall, barricades were allowed. We were very much allowed to be active on campus, whereas now, you know, we have an interdict against us. We're basically not really allowed to do anything. We can, you know, in inverted commas, protest peacefully. But what that essentially means is there's nothing much that we can do to really get management's attention. But in terms of the police interaction, I think it's all been kind of based on of technicalities that they've been legitimately, and again, in inverted commas, able to kind of confront students. So what the six people that were arrested, and then I think it was later five, because the one had actually had a panic attack in the police van, was then taken to hospital, was charged with obstructing a public road. A public road which separates different parts of our campus. So it wasn't that they were protesting in any particular violent way, because that hasn't been my view or anyone's view really. Of the protest at all, it's been peaceful, as is the case at Rhodes, and was during FISMA's fall as well. But I was there when there was the main clash between police and protesters, and it was insane, to kind of put it in any other term, to watch police, you know, students kind of going, raising their hands, going, "We're doing nothing. We're just standing here. We're trying to make change," and to have police, you know, do stun grenades and fire rubber bullets and, you know, those kind of things very, very peacefully. Well, the students being very peaceful, and then the police responding with such aggression.
Sorry, Mitchell, to cut you off there. We're just running a little bit out of time. I'm just wondering, so from your perspective, and I'm sure you've probably thought about this quite a lot, what is the role of the media there, and both the media, the student media on campus, and the broader sort of provincial and national media, and what are the sort of sensitivities that you have to weigh up when you're covering these issues?
Well, I think there's a number of things there. I think the first is that for us as Activate, we're making sure that people are informed as to what is happening. So there are a lot of people who have been very triggered by these protests, who have found themselves unable to leave their rooms, who are unable to really engage in the protests in the way that they'd want to be. So informing students as to what's happening, so that everyone is on the same page in terms of collective knowledge. So you know, sharing of information is number one. I think number two is the more media attention, and I think this speaks to both kind of in terms of student media and on a national level as well. Is the more media attention that comes to things like this, the more it kind of stays in the public discussion space. And the more people question and ask themselves, you know, where do they stand in terms of rape culture, and ask themselves very critical questions. So, I mean, I myself, as a male, sat there and thought, you know, crisis, what if, you know, I've had a sexual interaction and I wasn't as careful as I should have been. And it made me question all of my previous sexual interactions. And even though I'm very certain that, you know, that I'm not guilty in any form, it made me suddenly reflect on the way in which we need to be dealing with these situations, and how we need to then think about those kind of interactions. So I think the media has an important role to play in trying to promote that kind of conversation. But I think also considering, and this is I guess more of a personal view, but because of the way in which the institution has somewhat silenced students, I think it's very important for the media to put the spotlight on the university and ask the tough questions in lieu of the students who can't now use their voices. So, for example, I can tweet as much as I want about, you know, what's happening and the nature of rape culture and that kind of stuff, and it won't go against the interdict that the university's got against us. And I think that's there's something powerful there that you know, it's promoting that kind of a conversation.
Okay. Mitchell, thank you so much. Please keep up the excellent work down there.
Awesome stuff. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. If you're just tuning in, it's a Daily Maverick show on Cliff Central. We're talking about the hashtag RU reference list protests happening down at the university currently known as Rhodes. We're just chatting to Mitchell Parker, the editor of Activate Online. Next up, we'll be speaking to Sophie Mjwara, a third-year politics and economics student who's part of the RU reference list. Sophie, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. I know you've been on hold for a while. Thanks for being patient with us, Sophie.
Sure.
Okay. Sophie, I'd love if you could just start by telling us, you know, your involvement in these protests and perhaps how the what we're hearing as being a consistent rape culture down at Rhodes has led or culminated in the protests that are happening right now.
So the protests started last week, Sunday, because there was an anonymous list that's been called the RU reference list.
Mm-hmm.
That was distributed on Facebook, and the reference list didn't say why these people all clumped together, but basically because a lot of the people on the list are known by members of the Rhodes community as perpetrators, as people who have sexually assaulted others. So it started from that, and it just led to us demonstrating our unhappiness with how management and the university deals with cases of rape and sexual assault.
And I hear you, Sophie, and I'm curious about the sort of the build-up before the list, and I'm not sure what the exact question is here, but what has this, has the patriarchy and the misogyny and the rape culture at Rhodes, has that been something that's been bubbling for a while? Was that, what was the experience of the average sort of, I suppose, female student at Rhodes prior to the list being leaked?
It has been bubbling up for a while, and okay. I think that's why we saw the escalation that we did last week, with students protesting naked and that kind of thing, because we're tired of not feeling safe on our campus, because to be honest, majority of us don't. And it's a culture that does perpetuate rape culture and does perpetuate a whole lot of the problematic things that we need to deal with in our society. And I think that's why people have been as angry and as emotional about it, because it's not something that just came up with some list. It's something that we've been dealing with for a long time.
And I hear you, Sophie. And I mean, I'm curious what you say to people who say, you know what, this is a societal thing, it's a South African problem that we've been facing, and they're saying it's unfair to place the burden on roads management to fix this if the whole country hasn't been able to find a way to fix this idea of sexual violence and sexual abuse. What do you say to that?
In all honesty, yes, it is an issue that we do need to deal with in the country. Yeah. But at the same time, what we're trying to achieve here is that Rhodes changes its policies. Because at the moment they're insufficient and they are protecting the perpetrators instead of being there and supporting the survivors of rape and sexual abuse. Mm. So while yes, it is a huge issue that we do need to deal with as a South African society, not just as students at this university, but we're trying to change what we can at the moment, which is hopefully that the policies are changed.
Yeah. And Sophie, in your efforts to have these policies changed, can you just tell us a little bit about what your specific sort of demands on these, what you'd like to see in terms of the policy changes and some of the strategies to achieve that?
Well, the main demand that hasn't been met by management at the moment is that we want them to suspend the students that were listed on the reference list.
Hmm.
Because we don't think it's fair that survivors are forced to cower in their rooms because they fear seeing their perpetrator every day. We don't think it's fair that these perpetrators carry on with life as if like nothing's happened. And there was a demonstration that happened, I think it was 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, where there were posters put up under the hashtag #chapter212. Yeah. And that was based on the things that management has said to people who have come forward, because one of the things that they did say to us is that we're not getting people coming and reporting to us. But then when you go and report, some of the things that have been said are you sure you want to go through with this? You'll damage his reputation, that kind of stuff. So we find that completely unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable, and they need to change it. So we are at the moment just trying, because they've got an interdict taken out against us, against anybody that associates themselves with any kind of what they call unlawful activity, which includes barricading the university, disrupting lectures, and that kind of stuff. Mm. But then the problem is that because we can't use methods that have been known in the past to force them to change, at the moment we are embarking on campaigns that don't do any of those things. So we haven't been barricading this week. We haven't been disrupting any lectures, except yesterday, one of the things that we did do is go into our individual lectures and try and get the conversation to happen in that lecture about rape culture, about the events of last week, because management is trying to get us to carry on with business as usual, but we can't do that. Not after last week, not after the fact that they haven't addressed our demands, not after the fact that they're unwilling to come and speak to us even at this stage. So we are doing things like that today. There was a whole lot of posters that have been put up under the hashtag. There's RU interdict, RU reference list, and I am one in three. Yeah. And those were put up all over campus to try and bring awareness to the issue of rape culture and to the fact that we will not be silenced by management, and we have not stopped fighting, and we will not until we accomplish what we want to accomplish.
Has the support you've received, I've seen a lot of support in the media and on social media from people all over the country and even some over the continent and the world, is that spurring you on to really sort of dig in your heels and make sure that this campaign leads to meaningful change?
Yeah, I do. I think that the support is very necessary, because it also shows our management that we aren't being crazy, we aren't being disruptive just for no reason, that this is an issue that a lot of people feel very strongly about. And I also think that this issue isn't, yes, at the moment it is specific to Rhodes and the conversation is about Rhodes, but this issue isn't only here. It's at campuses all across the country, it's at campuses all across the world. So it is something that we do need to deal with, because it can't carry on like this.
Right. And I mean, you know, and I love that you say that, because, you know, also I guess importantly, it's also about not just being about in university or student movements, right? And how often rape culture is so pervasive. And you know, just to quickly reference what I think Mitchell was saying a little earlier, often males undertake behavior that they think is normal and that they think is okay, but which is actually really problematic. I mean, I was reading something by one Elisa Tlava, and you know, when she's talking about how clubs allowing, you know, I mean, literally something that seems as, that may seem to most people as unproblematic, as saying women get in free until a certain time, that in itself reinforces rape culture.
Sophie, I'm curious about the conversations, you know, RU reference list is having around student movements and flat structures. So some of the criticisms we've had post Rhodes Must Fall and post Fees Must Fall is around the student movements and the flat structures and how it's been difficult to identify the direction and the leadership and who's doing what and what's where, because of an emphasis of a structure being flat, and the emphasis on it being a collective, you know, one voice. Is that something that is being discussed as you guys mobilize? Is that a concern you have, or is that something that you're finding that you're overcoming?
We, at the beginning of the protest, we set up a task team that we elected as a student body, which I'm currently a part of. And this task team is basically dealing with organization of the movement and facilitating all of the discussions that have been happening, facilitating meetings to try and find out what it is that the student body who are concerned want from this, because we can't forget that there is a large amount of the student population here that really doesn't care at all. They are very apathetic to what we're doing, and we've faced a lot of anger from them as well, asking why we're disrupting lectures and all of those things. So that the task team is there to try and make sure that we do have a clear direction and that we do have a clear path.
Now, Sophie, before we let you go, because we're sort of running a little bit out of time, but what do you say to those students at Rhodes who are apathetic and don't care, and also the many people around the country who, you know, dismiss these protests and just really don't care? What would you say to those people?
They need to read. They need to read up on this issue, because it's not something that only the people who have experienced it or whose loved ones experienced it can fight. Because at this moment, that seems to be what it is here on the campus. And they need to listen to us, because that's mainly what we need. We need people to listen to us and to hear us and to acknowledge what we're saying.
Okay. Sophie, thank you so much. You know, we're supporting you however we can, and please, please keep up the excellent work down there.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Just tuning in, it's the Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com. Talk about the RU reference list, and we just spoke to the editor of Activate Online, and we spoke with also Sophie Mjwara, who's part of the task team down there working on how to end rape culture down at Rhodes. We're going to a short break and then we'll be right back.
When it comes to foreign investment, what is and what isn't allowed? What happens to your overseas money when you die? With the changes regarding overseas funds and how SARS treats you if you're a South African taxpayer, St. James Global has the answers for you. They've been doing this for years and focus on preserving and protecting offshore wealth, as well as creating succession planning structures. Make sure your worldwide assets pass on into the future. Go to stjamesglobal.com for more information. That's stjamesglobal.com. Your independent wealth managers.
St. James Global is an authorized financial services provider.
Hello, young Jim. It's me. You, 15 years from now. Oh, you're so old.
Shh, child.
I have news from the future.
Okay.
It's something they call motherhood.
Kids, that's not really my thing.
And yet you'll have three of them.
What kind of person has three children?
The kind who uses her evening bag to catch the hot, chunky flow of a child's vomit.
That is disgusting.
Oh, you'll be too tired to care. And you've inhaled a lot of craft glue over the years.
And why would I do that?
To build a replica of the Roman Empire out of egg boxes, among other things.
Not gonna happen. I will never stop partying.
No, you will go to parties. Princess parties, pirate parties, parties with inflatable castles, and chatty parents named Barry and Debs.
No.
Yes. And then one sad day, you and your husband will stop closing the toilet door, and romance will slip silently away through that door. This is your future, Jim. Don't wait until it's too late. Visit studentflights.co.za and travel before it's not fun anymore.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're back with us on the Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com. Just about halfway through what's been really, you know, really emotional show, but a really important one. We're talking about what's going on down at Rhodes and the protests we've seen recently over the past couple of weeks around the misogyny and patriarchy and rape culture that's happening down at that Rhodes. And we've got, you know, female protesters and a lot of students that are saying enough is enough, and that they're often victims of sexual abuse by fellow students, by lecturers, by tutors, by other staff members. And when they try to report these things, the response is really you're on your own. And we have people saying enough is enough. So we're really chatting to people down there in Rhodes to let us know exactly what's going on the ground and hear their perspectives. Next up, we'll be speaking to third year journalism and media studies student, Anima McBrown. Anima, can you hear us?
Hello, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect.
Hi, Anima.
Anima, I mean, we've, you know, spoke to some other students down there and spoke to somebody down at Activate who's been reporting on this. And Anima, we'd just like to hear, you know, your perspective. I think the the focus on this for us here in Gauteng in different parts of the country and around the world really started with the reference list. But what we're hearing is that this has been around there, you know, long before. So I'd love if you could just give us an idea of what your experience of rape culture down at Rhodes has been prior to the reference list.
Well, look, it's all about the relationship, right? The interactions we encountered on a basic level. How are women relating to the men that sit next to them in lectures, the men that take them out on dates, or the men that they meet in clubs? I think before the RU reference list came out, we were all feeling that we need to reassess some of those interactions and encounters. Because some of them are uncomfortable. Some of them, of course, lead to things that would constitute as crimes and injustice. But there's been for a long time coming, a sort of something bubbling under, you know, the big R word, the big rape word.
Yeah.
And I think RU reference list then allowed for all of those reactions to come out and be displayed latently for everyone to have to confront.
Absolutely, Anima. And you've been writing about this and trying to sort of be part of the movement. And sorry, Greg, want to jump in there?
Sorry, Anima. I think I was telling Kingsley beforehand when we went on air that you actually haven't been writing about this because you found it so difficult. And can you just tell us a little bit about that process, about your I understand you have a blog and you're a journalism student and writing something that you do, but you're telling me that it's something that's been quite difficult for you to engage with.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's a topic this big and this serious. Whether you like it or not, and we all have to admit, it does hit home, right? Now, it just depends how close it is. For me, it's pretty close. And it's been very difficult to have to engage as with my journalist hat on or with my writer hat on or just as one of the students that are supposed to be reporting and finding out how other people are reacting to this. It's more personal. And I think in that regard, it's been kind of like a bit of a toss-up. What if I do put pen to paper, what do I say? Because I'm writing from a very different place. And so it's very difficult to engage. Of course, I've been involved in conversations with, for example, the lady that I live with or with my fellow students in class. But to actually say this is an article by Nia McBrown, that's been the challenge because, like I say, it's close to home, it's personal. And I'm having to re-deal with having had really close encounters with something as serious as sexual violence.
And what are the conversations that are happening down there at the moment? Are people talking and sort of about their own experiences and how they can perhaps change this? Or can you just give us a sense of what's the feeling like amongst different students? And because it sort of seems hard, I think, from here to understand while there is sort of such a pivotal protest over such an intense issue, what do you talk about? Like,
I think there's been a range of discussions from different parts of campus, but I think what was most shocking for me personally was some of the reactions from our male counterparts. Mm. So if you were following the Rhodes SRC page, which has been really hot, you know, lately, some men in private and public conversations have been, passing some really problematic comments. So basically, these allude to the fact that in terms of the way that men think, okay, which obviously influences how they act, the notion that they hold, their ideology, right, what we are calling the rape culture, where it stems from, that's the problem. Because the misogyny comes through, the deep and problematic controls of patriarchy, this idea that ultimately, women are there for your pleasure, that they're something that they owe you, that part of their body you have a right to. That's been disappointing for me personally, hearing, you know, the humdrum along those lines coming from men, because I was expecting for men my age to be of a different thinking. Mm. When you have the luxury of being a trained mind, you're supposed to be conceptualizing things very differently from the average man in the street, not to belittle that, but I mean, being in this space, you have the resources. You're in a different category altogether. But to hear the same kind of misogynistic and problematic statements coming from men has been part of the conversation, which I think needs to be addressed.
Well, Anima, I just wonder: do you think this was a natural progression? This was a natural evolution for the student movements and what they would cover? Because I, you know, when I think back to last year. Patriarchy Must Fall kind of emerged even within the Fees Must Fall movement. Yeah. I remember as led by Bonsoplani at the time. Was it, you know, is it a natural progression?
And so, rephrase that to me. Is what a natural progression?
The
tackling of rape culture.
Right, right.
Like head on as opposed to as a subunit of a wider student movement.
But I think from last year when you know the school movement started to gain steam, I think that's when young people and women especially were realizing their role to play in changing things.
Mm.
So was last year, you know, the beginning of more to come. When I say more, I mean just the speaking up and speaking out. I definitely think so. But issues like this at Rhodes that we're dealing with rape and rape culture, I think they have been a long time coming because there have been alumni who have expressed that back in their day, you know, this is something that was not spoken about. You might experience, you might go through, you might witness, but you just don't talk about it. So, I mean, the wheel is turning, and now we're faced with young people who are frustrated and angry and confused enough to want to deal, to want to take it to, you know, the core of the problem. And that involves, if that involves protesting, then yes, but it's basically about saying we're here and we're alert, we're alive, we're awake, and we want to get to down to the bottom of things, and that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. And Emma, are you positive that this will? Do you feel positive that this will lead to a tackling of these issues and a change?
I do. I have to feel positive. I mean, I think I would go absolutely insane if I was in this space and thinking that even though I'm here and this is going on, nothing is going to come of it.
Hmm.
There's a chance and opportunity for, and I stress again, for men in particular, start having very serious conversations.
Hmm.
There's a chance and opportunity for management to rethink the system from the ground up. It's the way our residents work. It's the way that you know, the university structures are put in place, the rules that govern certain things, definitions that we put next to certain words. That's what needs to be addressed. And I do have a lot of hope for that to take place.
Anima, sorry, I think we sound like we're wrapping it up, but I just want to squeeze in one more question. I mean, you mentioned that men need to have these important conversations. You mentioned some troubling comments by men down there at Rhodes. And I'm curious about this idea of having allies. I mean, it's something that came up in a big way during Fees Must Fall, and we start having conversations about intersectionality. Is your perspective that the idea of allies is still something that can happen in the current movement? Do you think men and heterosexual male actually have a role to play? Can they actually genuinely be allies if they benefit from the system as it is now? What do you think?
Of course. Look, Ephesus McKaiser, who I look up to, wrote an article for IOL where he said that men and not the court essentially must end rape culture. And that's very true. Activate Online, one of our student press, initiated a conversation called Rhodes Guys Chat with hashtag #RUReferences, of course.
Mm.
And it features men sitting around casually, you know, it's not scripted in any way, but men sitting around in a circle and talking about some of the issues that they've experienced and been involved in that have got to do intricately with what we're dealing with at this stage. And I mean, it's as simple as that. They have to be the ones who are in control of making choices to partake in the conversation. It is them that need to get real, you know, in terms of urban speak. They need to get real with themselves and address the role that they have to play because they are the problem and they are the solution. So in terms of allies, of course we need men to be spearheading conversations, but they must not think that they're going to have conversations without us. We need to be included. Mm. It's our bodies, right? We, at the end of the day, we are the biggest victim. It's got to be a partnership, definitely.
Anima, I couldn't put it any better myself. Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, perfect. If you're just tuning in, it's a Daily Maverick show. We're just talking about the RU reference list protest happening down at the university currently known as Rhodes, will be swapping over to a blogger and student down at Rhodes, Pumelelo Matlake. Pumelelo, can you hear us? Pumelelo?
Hi there.
Okay, perfect. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Pumelelo, I mean, you're down there, you know, on the ground at Rhodes, and we were just chatting to another student there, Nima McBrown, about this idea of having allies and whether men and heterosexual men and other people who are down at Rhodes that are not, you know, black women who have been at the center of this movement, and whether that they can genuinely be part of dismantling the rape culture and the patriarchy we're seeing or hearing about down at Rhodes. And I'm curious what your take on that is.
So are you asking about the relevance or the concept rather of having allies and how allies possibly aid the movement? Is that your question?
Yes.
Well, I think the allies that we speak about in this present time and moment are the men. So what's happening on the ground right now here at Rhodes University is that men are coming to the ground, men are coming to the conversations, men are slowly but surely opening themselves to the dialogue. But what's missing is accountability. Men are not yet prepared to say that we perpetuate rape culture, we perpetuate sexual violence, and these are the ways that we perpetuate them, or these are the ways that we acknowledge ourselves to perpetuate them. And to add on to that, there is an absence, a very unfortunate absence of white men in particular from the conversation and from the movement itself. And in addition to that, this is how you know that what's going on right now at Rhodes University, this is how you know that not only is this about rape, sexual violence, and just the culture of sexual violence and violence in general, but this is all a part of the decolonizing project.
I'm really glad that you sort of laid out sort of the different people who are present and sort of not present in that. Yeah. How preoccupied do you think the movement should be with trying to make it inclusive for everybody to be part of the solution? Or is that, do you see that as being perhaps a distraction from what the focus should actually be?
No, it's not the movement's responsibility to make it inclusive. I think people who are not present from the movement know that they are not present, but also know that they are not present on their own accord. I think what maybe discourages people from participating in the protest, the various types of protesting, protest action that has been going on campus, is that there is a sense of guilt or a sense of self-implication that people are not willing to recognize and acknowledge in themselves. And I'm talking particularly to the men at this stage. So it is not up to protesters or activists or survivors of sexual violence to make the movement a warm, fuzzy place where men can feel as though they are valued and included. It is up to men to step up to the plate and to add to their contribution. And once we get that right, that will aid the success of the movement itself. The movement is going on regardless. And the aim of the movement is to eliminate rape culture. So that's the business of the movement. That's what we're here to do. And the question of inclusivity is more a question of, or it really has to do with people coming to the forefront, because it is an inclusive space. People just need to be willing to include themselves.
Lelo, just on the issue of these men, so are men down there, do you know if they're discussing some of these issues amongst themselves, or, you know, about this sort of worry of self-implication? Are they having conversations around this stuff and whether they should support it or not, or of their views of this sort of thing, or are they just sort of quietly hoping that they don't get listed on this sort of list? How are the men sort of reacting, or some of the men who aren't supporting this, do you know?
That's a bit of a complicated question, because the men at this stage, you know, it's either they're located in different places in the movement. So it's either they're outside the movement in the periphery, or they sort of have their feet, you know, halfway into the movement. What I've experienced, I think it was last week. Last week there was an open forum discussion on the lawns on campus where men could come together and discuss things or issues regarding rape, regarding sexual violence, cultures that enable this violence to happen. And men were saying the right thing, right? But with men saying all the things that, you know, one would like to hear, there's almost a tinge of dishonesty, and that dishonesty is inspired by the fear that men who think of themselves as speaking out will be implicated somehow in perpetuating rape culture, or will be implicated and have their names included in the list, things like that. So it's almost as though men are talking, and men are almost compelled to say the right thing. But what we're missing is that honesty. What we're missing is a man coming forward and saying, I've done A, B, and C, and those are the ways that I've perpetuated the situation in which we find ourselves today. I think men are scared of being accountable or being held accountable. But their honesty is necessary for the progression of this movement and for the progression in relation to, you know, the betterment of people's condition and eliminating the culture of sexual violence.
Lelo, thank you very much. That's all the time we have for today. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
Okay, we're just getting into the last portion of our show. And now we spoke to the man who's sort of been quietly adding his deep baritone to the conversation.
We're switching it up a little bit. We've got this guy here with the deep voice.
Absolutely.
But we haven't been able to focus on.
We've got Lee Molefi, creative strategist at Liberty Africa, who's working on something really interesting. Lee, right. Before you get into the details, you have this strong wording sort of that you sent through to us, and it says, youth confidence in traditional democratic institutions is in decline.
Absolutely, man.
What do you mean by that?
And I love that we actually go into that.
Yeah.
Particularly after the conversation about RU reference, absolutely. Right? Because, I mean, there it is. That is literally the answer for you. You know, the chapter 212 is about challenging how institutions are themselves not gendered. And, you know, that is a single case, but it speaks to the political energy that young people are showing more and more in challenging institutions and how institutions work. So you're absolutely right. That is a core premise of hashtag 2X, and I know you're going to explain what that is in a second. We will. But that is absolutely true. Young people are showing less and less confidence in that. But we, as VIP, we think it's very important to harness the energy that young people are showing around issues that are directly relevant to them. And as we think an important part of challenging the way the workings of institutions looks a lot like what we're seeing with the RU reference, yeah. And also a lot like using a vote.
I mean, you're saying fees must fall. RU reference list is just manifestations of what you're saying, that people are, and young people are fed up with the traditional way of doing things and the traditional way we know democracy. And you, together with VIP Voting is Power, have launched something that you just mentioned, hashtag 2X.
Yeah.
What on earth is hashtag 2X?
Hashtag 2X is a campaign that seeks to amplify the voices of young people as the local government relations approach, but also more generally. And very importantly, you know, and perhaps I should just quickly go to the etymology of hashtag 2X in itself. I mean, the hashtag represents, I mean, if we look at RU reference, we look at Fees Must Fall, we look at so many movements, and in fact, even lesser known movements than those, you'll see lots of evidence of how young people are using conversations to switch up the political agenda. They're using conversations to move political discourse. And, you know, often we think of youth impacting politics as strictly voter behavior, but we like to think of it as more than that. And if anything, we're confident about the premise of hashtag 2X is that if we use we can use conversations, and we can use the mobilizing power that young people are showing using hashtags, using conversations to make voting a little more meaningful. And I'll give you an example. Are you reference? Or, you know, many of these movements, and I'll stop actually referencing Are You Reference for fears of, you know, appropriating something that I, even as a heterosexual male, probably shouldn't be commenting on so loosely. But there's a lot of evidence of how injecting political discourse with new ideas can take place using those mediums. So for a young person who's in a local community somewhere, there exists the opportunity to mobilize himself and many others in their local communities around issues that are directly relevant to them, and to be able to force the relevant political representatives into acting, much like in many ways that we've seen the movements do so in the past.
So I'm still confused. What is hashtag 2X? Give us the elevator pitch.
Right. It is, you know, in its, the mechanics of hashtag 2X is we have a portal that aggregates comments from Twitter, USSD, WhatsApp, Facebook, and other platforms into a single interface that could give you a near real-time representation of what young people are talking about around the country. Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, you know, critically, is that we have the digital element of it, which are absolutely key, but also we have the real-world element of it. So in the case that a conversation flares up, for example, about disabled persons' access in the Eastern Cape, we would respond to that not only by amplifying that movement and amplifying that conversation, but also getting involved in a real-world sense, but also, for example, going out and having an activation in that place and speaking to the local young people about that. And those are some of the mechanics of hashtag 2X. As a broader campaign, it's a through-the-line campaign that includes radio, that includes real-world outdoor platforms that we want to use collectively to amplify anything that any given young person may begin to start a conversation about around the country in their local communities.
And what's the core aim? It's, you're launching it ahead of the local government elections?
Yeah. Core aim is to ensure that, and here's a key thing about the local government elections. Local government elections are real life. This is where the policy impacts your everyday life. And we want the stories of how, of what life for the everyday South African is from the young person themselves. That means better representation, and importantly, that means the local government representatives are held more accountable to the things that young people talk about, to the causes that young people want to advocate for in their local communities. We want to amplify anything and everything young people want to galvanize around in their local communities.
We're running out of time, but we'll have to share all the details of the hashtag 2X campaign on our Twitter account.
Absolutely. So we'll share with Live VIPZA and Lee Molefi, at Lee Molefi. It's all on our Twitter, on our Twitter page. Thanks everybody who talked to us today. It's the Daily Maverick Show. We'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on CliffCentral.com.